Welcome to 1A. This is a special session with special equipment. I will not rove, but these guys are free to rove at their leisure. We've got about 40 minutes, or we would have had if we'd come in 3 minutes ago, and roughly we think we'll split that 30 minutes for the guys and then 10 minutes for Q&A. So think up some good Q's and they'll think up some good A's. A reminder to complete your feedback via the app, and I'll perhaps remind you again after Christian and Bevan have finished, but when you ask a question, to identify yourself. First up, we'll be hearing from Christian Fenker. Christian is the Director of CTP Policy, Performance and Review with the State Insurance Regulatory Authority of New South Wales. He has extensive experience working for the New South Wales Government in regulatory, policy, strategy and communication roles in the fields of insurance regulation, consumer protection, emergency services and tourism. He has worked for CIRA and the former Motor Accidents Authority for 8 years. In his role, he is responsible for scheme design and development, reviewing and reporting on the performance of the scheme. Following Christian, we'll hear from Bevan. Bevan Dam is a partner in the financial services group of EY, leading personal injury services. He's a qualified actuary and has provided services across general insurance, injury schemes and health cover over the last 12 years, following 17 years as a systems engineer in the Australian Navy. Bevan provides key input to the New South Wales market through the scheme actuary role EY provides to the State Insurance Regulatory Authority. He has also provided a variety of other advice and performed research across injury schemes, including for treatment and care issues, benefit design and costing, economic submissions, regulatory change advice, operational design and capital management. So they're both very well qualified to speak to us today, and like you, I'm very interested to hear what's coming. Thanks, Christian.
Thank you. Let's get this going the right way. The presentation Bevan and I will give today will sort of cover three key areas. First up, an update in the current scheme. Scheme reform, so talk a little bit about our new scheme, which commences in a few weeks. And then Bevan will focus on the risks as the scheme actuary, looking at where they see the risks in the scheme, obviously the mitigations we've got in place, and importantly, the role of data in managing those risks. So I guess first up, it's just market share. It's been 2 years, I think, since someone's given this presentation, and during that time, what we've seen is Zurich exiting the CTP market in New South Wales. There was their share was sort of small to start with. NRMA's market share, as you can see, has declined slightly in that time. They're the dark blue graph. The major growth being green, which is Suncorp. So they've sort of grown. Suncorp is close to being on par now with NRMA for market share, but NRMA still is the largest insurer in the market in New South Wales. This graph is an important one for us, and it shows premium and affordability being a percentage of average weekly earnings. Basically, with this, the lower the better, and unfortunately, as you can see in the last few years, both have been on the rise. So, you know, since 2008, there's sort of been a period of stability up to 2008, and I think as Carmel Donnelly mentioned this morning, there's been some quite significant increase in price since 2008. We had a patch there in the middle around 2013 to 2015 where it sort of was stable, but then in the last couple of years started to increase again. So what we had seen also in that sort of 13 to 15 is the affordability improved in the scheme, but that again is starting to deteriorate. And I think ultimately what you can see is the affordability sort of going back to sort of a period of well over a decade ago. So it's these kind of things when you see the scheme performance. When we get to scheme reform, you'll see where the drivers for what was scheme reform. So the claim numbers, this graph and the next one, which are frequency, show a very similar tale. what we're seeing is a steady growth, but you can see a quite significant drop off just in the last couple of quarters. This data is only up until June this year, but the trend beyond June is similar to what we're seeing there. And for both frequency and numbers, there's two real reasons we're starting to see that drop off. And a lot of it is behaviours there. One is the introduction of a regulation around costs, and that prohibited contracting out on claim settlements below $50,000. So what that did was had an impact on the minor severity legally represented claims, which is where the major growth was happening in the scheme. So it has actually led to a reduction in those. Also then, the main other thing I think there is the fraud task force. So some of you may have seen some of the media. Again, Carmel mentioned it this morning. There's a police strike force, Ravens, which sort of early in the year started raiding offices of service providers. So the word started to spread. So we started to see some shifts in behaviour. More recently, they've made some arrests, which have got a bit of publicity. One person's already got a jail term, and I think the word from the police is a few others will end up getting jail terms as well. So we're seeing a shift in behaviours there. What we're also using is it's better use by the insurers of data. Once we started to kick off the fraud task force, insurers, I guess, were using their data. They were taking a bit of a plan against what was seen as unmeritorious claims. So I think that combined with the police activity did see the reduction in claim numbers. But what it's also seen, which we're just starting to try and get on top of, is quite a significant increase in late of withdrawn claims or claims lodged but just not progressing anywhere. And they're quite sort of high numbers compared to what we've been used to. And as I said, we suspect that what we're seeing anecdotally at this point is since June, that trend is continuing. Frequency, as I mentioned, it does reflect what we're seeing in claims there. And it's 2014-2015 is the real serious spike there along the graph. While there's sort of been a gradual increase since 2012, really around 14-15, the last couple of years, it started to increase quite significantly. What we are seeing, which is interesting, we believe this is directly related to the cost regulation, is while the minor severity claims are reducing, we are seeing an increase in moderate severity claims. So there's been some behaviours to push claims that may have previously been minor severity up into moderate. So that's something obviously us and the insurers are monitoring to see whether this is actually some degree of embellishment or there's a legitimacy to this increase in claims. The next graph here is frequency and propensity. And I guess it puts the experience of the current scheme into perspective. What we can see with the graph on the left is the fact that the propensity is actually far outstripping the actual claims. So historically, I think what we aim for is a target of around 67% propensity. So that's basically for the percentage of claims compared to casualties. So 100 casualties, 67 claims. We're seeing it exceeding that. What we've seen in some parts of Sydney is propensity actually exceed 100%. So we're getting more claims than reported casualties. Again, a great driver for the action we're doing in the compliance space and in reform. Distribution of funds. And again, Carmel foreshadowed this one this morning, is the scheme is running at a situation where less than 50% of the premium collected from insurers is actually making its way back to injured people. And that was one of the key issues for us in the reform space from efficiency, both from feedback our politicians were getting and from our own market research, which I'll touch on a little bit later. As you can see, sort of the major component of costs there are insurer profit, legal costs and insurer costs, which is close to half the money that is collected currently out of the scheme. And that has been sort of fairly constant now for a number of years. We're not seeing any huge shifts from a sort of year-to-year basis. So the initiatives that we have actually undertaken, I've mentioned a couple of them there, the regulation, the fraud task force. One of the most successful things we have done in the last couple of years, is, from our perspective, is the introduction of the claims cost disclosure. And for those of you that are unaware, what this is this requires plaintiff lawyers, when claims are settled, to provide to us, the regulator, a cost breakdown. So what they'll give us is what the claim settled for and what costs came out and what actually ended up in the claimant's hand. So that sort of gave us insights that across, or a visibility that we didn't previously have. I think everyone sort of speculated, there was research done on what proportion of funds were taken out. Until we actually started collecting the data, we weren't 100% sure. It really helped us inform the development of the cost regulation. There was some stuff in there that was a little bit frightening in no particular claims of just what proportion of money was coming out. It allowed us to see trends across sort of severity types and behaviours of particular law firms with certain types of claims. So that, for us, has actually been probably one of the most informative things that we have been able to do in recent years, is to get that level of insight. So looking at the drivers, so jumping into reform, the drivers for reform, four key issues. None of them are probably a great surprise. The first one is the premium increase and affordability pressures. I think we've got to keep in mind there's 5.5 million policies sold each year. We get about 15,000 claims, so that's 0.3% of those make a claim. So often when noise comes en masse, as it has done from, say, particular vehicle groups, whether it be heavy vehicles, taxis, motorcyclists, or others, there is sort of a volume there. So I guess when noise is sort of made, the politicians listen. The other one was the efficiency of the scheme, the fact that less than sort of half the money collected was making its way back to the injured people in the way of benefits. So I think for anyone sort of looking in from the outside, that just wasn't an acceptable sort of figure. Timeliness is the other one, and I guess it's the challenge of any sort of lump sum scheme. There's a period of negotiation, injuries have to settle. Again, our research showed us that people thought money should start flowing more quickly, particularly when it was stacked up. So even minor claims, a whiplash, people might have a couple of weeks off work, but on average it was at least a year and a half for those claims to finalise. So generally that was considered as unacceptable. And then, of course, is the fraud and the exaggerated claims, which I've touched on. And, of course, for those of you that saw sort of options papers and positions papers, those four things formed the basis. The reason we ended up with the scheme we've ended up with, and so what it does introduce a no-fault component for the first 6 months, and part of the reason for that is also the introduction of a minor injury threshold at 6 months. The threshold and the reason for that is the evidence was if it genuinely is a minor injury, if you're only off work or off your feet for a couple of days, within 6 months, most of those people should be better. If you're not, maybe it's not a minor injury or it's not a simple sort of soft tissue injury. The idea being, and again, dealing with the evidence, that if people sort of, the longer they stay in the scheme, often the health outcomes are not as good. So the idea is to try and get people back to life as quickly as possible. So what we've ended up with is a scheme that best addresses the objectives of reform. As I said, it was the most preferred option from submissions received. And the market research we did, which was really interesting, the market research company went, price will be your number one issue. It always is. Any research, it's always about price. Price was important for people that had never made a claim. Not surprisingly, those that had made a claim, they didn't care what the scheme cost. They got value out of it. But the two things that really jumped out quite heavily was the timeliness. People, even those that had made a claim, were appalled at how long it took, and those that had never made a claim couldn't understand why it would take so long. The other one was the efficiency. There was huge sort of feedback from the market research that it just wasn't acceptable that they're paying for a mandatory product, but half the money is going to someone other than those on the receiving end. I've said a new scheme, by introducing statutory benefits sort of from day one, improves health outcomes. by introducing the no fault, just from a social policy perspective. You're injured on the road, you've probably made a contribution to it, you should receive something to try and get you back to life. Obviously, in combination, all these will reduce premiums, and that obviously is a key objective. The introduction of this scheme, by removing the lump sum for most people, hopefully will reduce the incentive and the ability for the fraudulent claims as they exist today. Bevan will touch on in the risks as well. You know, what we'll see is probably there'll be some behaviour. So I guess those that are in, particularly in New South Wales, the workers' comp scheme will be able to give us some good advice on those shifts for us that we have to monitor. Also, there's this move towards the way national schemes are operating now for injury and personal injury, and David Bowen touched on that as well. That last point is, I think we need to take a little bit of control before sort of the Commonwealth or someone else rocks along and says, here's how these things will look. So I think part of us is sort of putting control in our own hands there as well. Many of you might have seen this. This was out of one of the discussion papers, and it's basically looking at the four reforms, how the current scheme stacks up and how the new scheme stacks up. I guess what we're really looking for there is basically people getting what they need when they need it and getting back on their feet a lot more quickly. So hopefully removing sort of that lump sum mentality for most, and obviously the downside that can often present. I won't sort of labour through those in detail. But the objectives, I guess, of what we're trying to achieve through the move to defined benefits. As I said, it's about people getting what they need when they need it. An interesting argument came up a lot during the reform process that we heard a lot was, but if you take away people's lump sum, how will they pay their mortgage? But, they're not going to get the lump sum to pay their mortgage. And the question was, if they're waiting 3 or 4 years for it, how are they paying their mortgage in the meantime? Strangely, the conversation then moved on fairly quickly, usually after that. So, people are going to start getting their income replacement from the beginning. They're getting their medical treatments paid, so hopefully the out-of-pocket is not as great. There still will be some lump sum for those that are more seriously injured and are not at fault, so that common law component will remain. A really significant change there is the ongoing treatment and care if required. So currently that's a common law ahead of damage. In the new scheme it won't be. So people beyond 5 years, if they have medical and care needs, they'll be met by the Lifetime Care Authority. So the Lifetime Care Authority will become an insurer, a CTP insurer from that perspective for people after 5 years. And the future medical was sort of an area, I guess, of negotiation and sort of a fairly significant cost impost on the current scheme as it stands. Increased coverage, that's the no-fault component. So we've got about 7,000 people a year in New South Wales who are getting very little or nothing out of the current scheme, so they will all have access. And as we said there, it's immediate. So regardless of sort of fault or otherwise, you are into the scheme. And a lot of it keeps coming back to what you need when you need it, rather than how much you can negotiate. So as a result, and obviously the advice from the actuaries who sort of work on a lot of these schemes, is hopefully there's a much higher degree of stability, predictability and efficiency for the new scheme. So as we've touched on, common law thresholds. One of the big things is that people can't sort of make a claim for common law before 20 months and effectively get their claim before 2 years. The idea being is the intention is that it will encourage people to move on, particularly those with lesser injuries, that they're not going to sort of just keep fighting to get their money, but they'll go, I'm actually better, I'm back at work, I'm back at life. It does leave the money there for the more seriously injured, and the idea being, as we know, if injuries take time to stabilise, hopefully 2 years is enough that, for people with the more serious injuries, there's sufficient stability there for them to enter negotiations with the insurer. Also, that having that time lag hopefully again will reduce the opportunity and the prevalence of the exaggerated and the fraudulent claims. Hopefully there's just not enough there for people to be able to do that. And I guess, you know, small claims, it's, you know, for minor injuries, whiplash, you know, where you're getting the average cost of a whiplash claim at $60,000 or $80,000, which just seems sort of out of proportion with the degree of injury or the time off work. Hopefully that will start to reduce that as well. Although, as Bevan will say, and as the actuaries say, no, only time will tell that. You know, we're going to put the pressure on them to see results earlier, but they'll sort of keep holding out for however many years it's going to take for us to see the results. The last of my slide, which just really touches on the benefits, underdefined benefits in the scheme, obviously loss of earnings, treatment and commercial care. Another thing we've got rid of in the scheme is gratuitous care, which again was one of those buffer points for future payments. Again, if you need care, it will be provided commercially, rather than just using it as a negotiation point. Common law is going to be limited. Future loss of earnings, non-economic loss for those that qualify, legal services, death benefits and the workers' comp recovery. This is a major shift for us, and we recognise it's a major shift for the insurers as well. There's a massive cultural change. You know, we've got a scheme that's based on a lump sum settlement. It's adversarial pretty much from day one. Getting everyone to start thinking about, it's actually about supporting the injured person from day one rather than everybody having a fight about it, helping to try and get people back on their feet. The ideal outcome is that quite a small number of people make it to common law only, that the vast majority of people will get what they need, they'll be able to get back on with life. One of the areas that we're sort of really hoping will sort of make a bit of a difference is, as I touched on, is the future medical, that it will be available when you need it. So rather than thinking about I may need a new knee every 10 years and let's negotiate something for that, if you need a new knee, it's there. The other one I think that I should have touched on a little bit more is the 6 month as the gateway test. So as I said, everybody's in for 6 months. So to get past the 6 months, you have to have an injury other than a minor injury. For those in New South Wales who are close to this particular scheme, you may have sort of followed, there is quite a lot of disagreement on what a minor injury is. And the commitment we've made is we've drawn a line in the sand on what we believe minor injury is. We'll be monitoring it and, you know, we'll modify accordingly. The Minister has committed us to a review at 2 years to see whether we've actually got that right. And like a lot of these things, without wanting to steal some of Bevan's thunder, the scheme's not an off-the-shelf scheme. Like, there isn't anything we could have just gone to and picked off the shelf and gone, here it is, let's put it in place. All of these schemes are sort of made to order, this one included. So there's a lot of things we really have to just put in place, measure, and that's the importance of data. Now, you hear a lot about trying to get real-time data, and that's what we're trying to get, so we can sort of work out where the pressure points are and where the sort of the tweaks will be needed into the future. So that's a little bit of where we've been with the current scheme, where we're heading with the new one. And what I might do is throw over to Bevan to talk a little bit about the risks as our actuaries see them and what we'll do about them. Thank you.
Thanks for stealing some of the thunder here and there. But anyway, so the scheme has been designed and it has a bunch of different features. Through that design process, we also thought, well, OK, what makes it stronger or weaker and where are the touch points? Where are the ones the community won't let us not do? What are the ones the community really wants? And so how do we try and manage those residual risks as a result? So first one, I'll call it out, costing of the new scheme, one of the key risks. Government want to deliver a premium of $551, and in the first iteration, the first set of filings, the target is $528. So that's what the government put out and said, we want to get the scheme down to $528 during the first year. So of course the first risk that's sitting there is, well, did the actuaries get the costing right? We selected assumptions based on the design. Where do you get designs from? Where do you get the costings for that design from? Some of those are ground up. Some of them, you don't actually have that experience. And so that's one key area that we needed to look around different schemes in the country and also do ground up and got to a costing that supported the $528. So that's the first one. I guess that's putting the actuaries in the spotlight for the new scheme. You can always point a finger later on. Service provider behaviour. So as Christian talked about, major impact on the scheme. So how do the different service providers behave? So you've got two key stakeholders, claimants and policyholders. You've got, well, in this scheme at the moment, three key service providers. You've got insurers, plaintiff lawyers, really, and then medical profession. At the moment, the medical profession is kind of secondary and they're more managed by the claimant and the plaintiff lawyers. In the new scheme, the service provider mix changes, so less weight towards the plaintiff lawyers. They don't really get to come into the scheme for at least 20 months unless, one circumstance where they can come in earlier is where the whole person impairment assessment is greater than 10%, for example. So who then is helping to drive the claimant behaviour and who's supporting the claimant? If you look across, I guess, workers' comp schemes, then you'll see that medical providers kind of provide that support and how to navigate the system a bit more. They're also in there right at the front and the start of the recovery process. CIRA's also recognised that, okay, well, we want to actually be proactive in that as well, so they're setting up other services that will also provide that support, not necessarily medical, but really the claims management process and helping the claimants navigate their way through, because they won't have a lawyer or for the first 20 months, typically. So what we'll also see coming out of that is the insurers are setting up their new claims management models. So some insurers have managed defined benefits before, others haven't, so that's a new kind of environment for them. And what we'll also see with the lower legal involvement, where will they start to end up and how will they change their behaviours? What we've seen in the current scheme is law firms have set up distinct business models around this New South Wales CDP scheme. So I've got 5 minutes to go and I've just got to my first slide. So the other two key ones I want to touch on, the changing nature of fraud and exaggeration. So what we're trying to do with the new scheme is take away that lump sum, I guess, mentality and the driver for, from a fraud perspective, there's a big payout. You didn't really have to do something. You had to go along a path and you could eventually get to a settlement. Didn't even have to get to a court. And the new system is, well, show us your medical issue and we'll help provide support for that from day one. And so really getting to where you need a common law settlement. It's not so much harder, it just means you have to actually have evidence in the future. And the fourth point I've got there is around broad awareness of the new scheme benefits and processes. So what that's really getting at is if over time the policyholders don't think there's value in this new scheme, or if the claimants think they're not getting good outcomes or they're getting poor outcomes, then the government's already indicated and put review timelines out there that says, well, we may actually revisit the model we've just put forward. So I guess that's another key risk, is if the scheme's not functioning the way we're all trying to make it work, then how would it change in the future? And is that likely? Okay, so just to touch on some high-level thinking about how we categorise and think about what are the key risks and where are they coming from. So what we've got is, if I think of a sequence, you've got claimants coming in, day one they're no fault. So you've turned up, you've had a road accident, okay, you get treatment and you get weeklies straight up if you can show that you need those things. Within the first 6 months, you've got to show that you're not at fault. So that's one category. About 6,000 people, we think, will fall into the at-fault category. The next category is minor injuries. So There's another about 3,000, we estimate, although that is an estimate, that will start and be categorised as minor injuries. So the consequence of that is they won't have access to the scheme after 6 months. So they'll have full access, no fault, up to 6 months. The third group is what we'll call the less than 10% whole person impairment category. So that's where your injury is not minor and you're not, and you are a not at fault claimant. And so that'll be the majority, and that's largely the participants in the scheme that we see today. And then you've got the greater than 10% whole person impairment category. And that's, we don't expect that will change from what it looks like today. About 1,400 to 1,500 claimants per year fall into that category. So if we talk about some of the key risks around that and what that looks like, we expect we'll have significant disputes around each of those key points as people are trying to identify and drop down into the next larger larger category, or where there's more and longer term benefits available. There's new dispute mechanisms being developed for the new scheme. They haven't really had blood pumped through those arteries yet, so we don't know how that's going to work. We don't know how the providers are going to be reacting to the various dispute processes. We don't know how the dispute process itself will start to land on whether the insurers have been making good decisions or poor decisions, and whether plaintiff lawyers, how hard are they playing in that space. That's all uncertainty for us as well. So they're all key risks. And the risks are that the claims, instead of 6,000 being in the blue, there's less because they've dropped down. Instead of 3,000 being in orange, there's less because they've dropped down. So obviously if they drop down, they can access weeklies for a lot longer. They can access treatment and care ongoing for life. The other thing is, post 2 years, you've also got the common law process that comes in. So one of the key aspects will be, as people go through the fitness for work assessments, how many will be lapsing out of the system? So how many will be active at the end of this period, which means what's the likelihood of those claimants becoming a common law claim into the future? So they're all key elements that we're monitoring very closely, because they'll significantly affect what we've costed the scheme at. So if I draw that out a little bit more, I've touched on most of that. So the no-fault assessments, largely they'll be made around about the 3 months. At the moment, the equivalent in the scheme is the $5,000 ANF. What we saw there is there's actually a lot of people who don't claim for that, because to claim they need to actually go to the police and they're at fault. So there's a bit of an issue there. How will we see that behaviour change? That's not clear. Is there going to be under-reporting into the future? There may well be. Is it a saving? Not a great saving if it doesn't happen, because the average claim size is quite modest. Minor injuries. The reason the disputes may happen is because it's a new definition. Soft tissue injury and or minor psychological or psychiatric injury. So these are new categories that have been defined in legislation and in the guidelines. They're untested, they haven't been through a dispute process, haven't been through a court process. So these are key issues around how well will that hold or won't it. The third group really is the work fitness for work assessments. So this is not dissimilar to other assessments we see. So New South Wales Workers' Compensation has something similar. And really, this is one of the keys to between 3 months even, that fitness for work assessment starts to act. And how well that acts and how well that identifies people actually who are fit to not be on the scheme and to be back out either work or back to their life, given that 40% of people in the CDP scheme don't actually work. That's a major determinant of, well, how many potential common law claims are there? Because in this common law, there's also a top-up for a bit of technicality. There's some people who didn't get their claim in quick enough can't actually get their weeklies for the initial period, well, that opens up an opportunity to take a common law piece back to them. So there's quite a few risks around time and untested elements of the new guidelines. The 10% threshold, we expect that will probably hold quite well, although given that there's significant benefits attached to getting through that threshold now, we expect that will come under additional pressure as well. So as a framework for trying to monitor all of these various pieces, as Christian indicated, in the second BC, it's a long tail scheme. We won't really know what the experience is, particularly of the common law element, which is the majority of the cost element. We'll only just start to see the claims that are reporting and getting through into becoming common laws, common law claims after 1 to 2 years. We won't actually see what the size of them looks like for 4 to 5 years on average. That'll be when we start to see the real experience of the scheme flowing through. We will have early expectations because the active claim numbers will certainly give us an indicator of the residual and who's still in the scheme and who's likely to be making those claims. So to get to those points about working out if the scheme is still working, how do we make those judgments at 1 year and 2 years? We can only make some of those judgments. Other things really will still rely on the expectation that we have today. So to achieve better monitoring though, CIRA's recognise that that's a key issue around the new scheme. So they've invested in designing a new database that's been a much more comprehensive approach. It is built for defined benefits, so it's got a lot more detail about the more regular pieces that are running, greater depth and breadth of the variables and data being captured. I'll just finish. How about I just drop through to? All right. So just to conclude then. So the scheme benefits are substantially different to the current scheme. Current scheme common law, new scheme, much smaller common law, much larger defined benefit structure. As Christian said, it's bespoke for the scheme, it's purpose-built, creates uncertainty. The key risks, how do we mitigate them, how do we measure them, how do we not overreact to them? So if the active claims are higher or lower, that doesn't mean the common law numbers will be higher or lower. It means that there's an indicator. So it's careful not to overreact. So I'll stop there. Thanks very much.